Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Today's another great show. We have a couple of guests for you. Of course, we've had Ron Chepsik here before, and he's brought us a guest and a very special story. So, first of all, welcome, Ron.
Thank you for inviting me back to the show.
And the special guest we have is John Mark Dugan, all the way from the mother country, Russia. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, let's first bring in Ron. Now, Ron, how did you get to meet and get connected with John Dugan?
Well, one day, I guess it must have been about a year and a half or so ago, I stumbled on John's story, and it was very interesting. And John can explain, you know, his story to you. But essentially, here you have an ex-cop that got in trouble with the FBI and was living in Moscow, and he had written a book about it. And of course, I have a crime show myself, Crime Beat. And I said, wow, this would be a really interesting guest to have on my show. It's an unusual subject. And so I invited John on my show, and it went real well. It had really good response and all that. And I was, you know, thinking about the book, and I went back over it, and I said, hey, this would make an interesting film project. And of course, I'm a screenwriter, and I'm always looking for interesting subjects to write about. And I said, wow, I said, this might work, you know. So anyways, I talked to John, and John was amenable to working together. And so that's how we got started. I'm working on what I decided in the end what would be a TV series. So I'm writing a pilot and what they call a series Bible, which is sort of an outline of that. And so that's how I got. And then I decided that, you know, I wanted to, you know, to see John in person. And John invited me to Moscow. And so about, I guess about a month ago or so, well, actually it's about 3 weeks ago, I ended up going to Moscow to see John. I spent a week there, and it became a very interesting time and unexpected, a lot of twists and turns, which we'll talk about a little later.
So it's a constant watch on Mr. Dugan. So John, let's go to you. Let's give a little bit about your background. I'm quite aware of it already, but just for the listeners, let's talk about who you are and where it all started.
Well, I enlisted in the Marine Corps in 1996, I was honorably discharged in 1999. I owned a horse shipping company and a database building company after that. And I got bored and I became a police officer in about 2002. And I was a police officer until 2009, when I started blowing the whistle on some really unsavory things happening in my department. And my department at the time was the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. And you know, once I stepped across that thin blue line, so to speak, speaking up about, I guess you would say, injustices that I didn't like, then, you know, the administration put a target on my back and I had to get out of police work.
So let's talk about that. So first of all, what did you first notice that you thought was wrong about what was going on with the police?
Well, I mean, you know, in any profession, there's things that are always going to be wrong. But what really pushed me over the edge is I put in for a transfer to a really bad area because, you know, for me, you know, the more excitement, the better. And the bad area happened to be a place called Belgrade. And when I got out there was a sergeant and his group of guys. They were running around in tactical gear, just beating the absolute crap out of Mexicans and blacks. And you know, I mean, they'd falsify charges against them. They'd beat them for no reason. They'd send them to the hospital and they'd take their photos and post them on Facebook, writing comments about how, oops, they found it on the stairs, or I wanted to beat this guy more, but his children were there. And it was really awful, awful situation. And I decided I didn't want to stand for it. So I took their Facebook postings and I sent them to Internal Affairs. And Internal Affairs tracked it back to me. And that's when all hell broke loose.
Now, that must have shocked you, right? Because you say that it brought it back to you. So did they ever do anything to the people that were assaulting minorities at all?
Well, they put one guy on probation. They fired another guy. But, you know, at first they weren't doing anything. And when they refused to do anything, I took the Facebook posting and I sent them to the media, to the Palm Beach Post. And then they didn't really have a choice. They put the sergeant on probation, so he didn't get fired for that. He got fired eventually for yelling at a white woman over the intercom on his car. So, yeah.
So what did they do to you then? How did you find that they felt
for
you? Like, what was the first thing you noticed?
I went from Deputy of the Month twice in 2008. Now, we're talking out of 4,000 people. I went Deputy of the Month twice into having 5 Internal Affairs investigations for a myriad of things. I mean, we're talking about getting involved in a civil matter where it was a car being repossessed, and a lady, a very large lady, who was the owner of the car, had to get her car seat out of the back, and, you know, she was too fat, to reach the buckle on the other side, and they helped her out. And so I got written up for getting involved in a civil matter, and, you know, and I'm like, you know, if you guys are going to write me up for something so stupid, then just go ahead. I'm not going to let some little kid ride without a car seat because, you know, you didn't want me getting involved in a civil matter. It's ridiculous. But you name it. You know, they tried to backdate a traffic accident where a four-wheeler had run into my parked police car. They backdated it as an accident.
Did you find that the local police that you were working with turned against you then, or how was that?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think that was? Just because you kind of ratted a couple cops out?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you don't do that in police work. But, you know, in police work, you shouldn't be putting the other guys in the positions they were putting other guys in. You know? So, you know, I had to make a choice, a moral choice, whether I'm going to let that go on or whether I'm not, you know, and I chose not.
Okay, so you retired then from the police then. And what was your next move? What did you take on then?
Well, I started a bunch of whistleblower websites all around the country where good cops could go on and they could post problems within their police departments without fear of getting caught, fear of retaliation.
And how did that go? Like, was it successful? Did you have good feedback?
Oh, it was incredible, yeah. Like, I had one website for her in California, and then a bunch of the city councilmen got indicted for information that was coming out on corruption. There was another, I had another one for Renton, Washington, where the police were involved in all sorts of shenanigans. And then, of course, Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office was my main one. And, I mean, the amount of stuff that I exposed on there was just incredible, you know. The sheriff blowing $90,000 on three barbecue grills for his campaign re-election. He bought 140 unmarked cars to give to civilian managers as perks for helping him with his re-election. Taking members of the mafia to lavish dinners on the taxpayer dime. I mean, just incredible, incredible stuff.
Wow. So now you are no longer a cop and you're doing this kind of sleuthing online. I'm sure the reaction was bad as far as the police and as far as Palm Beach County.
Well, they investigated me for 7 years.
But what were they trying to do now at that point?
Well, at that point they were on a fishing expedition, and they were looking at anything they could to try to get me thrown in jail.
And so then, how did it become where all of a sudden you got the FBI raiding your house?
So, in 2015, I was told by a cop, I was like, by a friend of mine, said, hey, this guy Mark Lewis is up to something. He's like, they're going to have you put in jail, they're going to have you killed. You better figure out what's going on. So I said, okay. So what I did is at this point I owned a telecom company, and I set up some servers around the world where I would route my voice offshore into one server where my voice would be changed. It would route it into New York and then bounce it back onto the wire where I could make a telephone call down to Florida, and it looked like it was coming from a New York, like a Manhattan number. And I called this investigator, Mark Lewis. He thought I was a woman. And, I didn't call him, I didn't call him for a police matter. I called him because I knew he had a construction, like a home renovation business. So I called him on the pretext that we were, me and my boyfriend, remember, I sounded like a woman. We're moving down to Florida and wanted a house remodeled. So he was happy to help, and I spoke to him for a few days, and then I told him that, oh, I broke up with my boyfriend, and, you know, I faked crying and all this other stuff, and I mean, he bought it hook, line, and sinker, and he started flirting with me. And he thought he was talking to this wealthy Wall Street heiress whose father owned a company that did mergers and acquisitions of stock brokerage houses. And I talked to this guy, I don't know, hours and hours. I've got 20 different conversations with him admitting to all manner of crimes, from hacking to money laundering, abusing his power to silence dissidents for the sheriff, lying, falsifying documents to get warrants, torture, and, you know, and I knew that they were going to play this game where they said, oh, well, we knew it was this guy, John Dugan, so we were just going along with him. I convinced this guy to buy $119,000 worth of stock. I told him that Deutsche Bank was buying a small brokerage house and that their stock was going to double. So he did. He went out and he drained his Wells Fargo account and he bought this stock. For $119,000, which incidentally dumped. He probably lost $20,000 or $40,000 bucks on it. But yeah. But you know, at least I had proof that, you know, I mean, look, if he knew it was really me, he wouldn't have bought the stock. Right. You know?
Yeah, of course.
So I went to the FBI with all of this, and they did, guess what they did? They did nothing.
So, did they investigate or did they just refuse it?
No, they told me that, you know, they weren't going to be bothered with it. Oh. And, yeah. So I said, okay. And, I said, well, if my privacy isn't sacred to you, then your privacy is not sacred to me. And what I did is I harvested about 800 million rows of public data, and I wrote an algorithm to match up certain pieces of data and extrapolate who out of those 800 million rows were confidential protected sources that had leaked into the public domain. So out of these public sources, I was able to pull out 14,000 names of FBI, CIA, DEA officers, their names, their addresses, their phone numbers, and I posted it online.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so there we go. You're making the next step. So how did they respond to that?
Ah, well, they raided my house. They took everything. And they put surveillance teams on me.
So what was their excuse when they raided your house and did that? What did they say the reason was?
Hacking.
Oh, okay. So and so did they actually charge you, or did they just tell you this is the reason?
No, because they didn't have the evidence.
Right.
So they took everything. They took all my computers. They took all my hard drives. And they had surveillance teams watching me 24/7.
Wow. So what did you do then? Like, what was your next thing to do then? What were you left to do?
So I went down to the Keys. So at first I didn't realize that I was being watched. I went down to the Keys and I rented a boat. I was going to take it to Cuba. And that night, I caught one of the surveillance teams in the marina watching me, and it was a total fluke. But I went to the bathroom, and instead of going back to the boat that I was sleeping on, I decided to go for a little walk because I couldn't sleep. And I went around the backside of the marina, and there was a Suburban or a Tahoe with the whole back of it was glowing with surveillance equipment. And I could see like a camera feed pointing at the boat that I happened to be on. And, a dude in the back jumped out and, used his body to block the to block the glow, and he says very very I guess say suspiciously that, oh hey, how you doing? I'm waiting for a charter, blah blah blah, you know. And I'm just like, oh yeah, okay. And I just kind of went along with the story that I knew, and I knew I was being watched. So I scrapped that idea, and I went back to Palm Beach County. I stopped at my mom's house. I got a wig out of her drawer and a pair of blue sunglasses and a change of clothing. I put everything in a bag, and I had somebody leave me a car on the north side of the Palm Beach Gardens Mall. And I went into the Palm Beach Gardens Mall on the south side, went into a couple of stores, went to a dressing room, and I changed. I put on the wig and the blue glasses, and I left. I left out the north side of the mall, got into the car, and started driving north. Threw away my phone, got three new burner phones, used them at different times, and I made my way up north. And when I got there, I called around to different aircraft rental companies, and I rented a small aircraft, a 172. I told the owner I was writing a book on plate tectonics, and that I needed to fly over some GPS coordinates in Canada. Now, for that, you don't need TSA clearance to get out. I knew my passport was already blocked. I was on the no-fly list. And I know because I tried to buy tickets to leave the country, and I was informed by the lady at the airline that she couldn't inform me why, but she wasn't allowed me to sell me tickets. So I knew right then I was on the no-fly list. Mm-hmm. So I rented this airplane, and the first set of coordinates were over a small airfield in Canada. And as soon as we got over them, I told the guy I was having a heart attack. And he made an emergency landing. And I jumped out, I threw him some cash, grabbed my bag, and I took off through the woods, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, I must have looked awful because I hit my head on a tree. I'm just like gushing blood. But I made it to a bus. And I made it to Toronto Airport, and I took the first flight, Turkish Airlines. I got a flight to Istanbul and then to Moscow.
Well, now, so what made you choose Moscow?
Well, number one, they don't have an extradition treaty with the United States.
Okay.
And number two, they're the... Really, Russia is like the only government that's strong enough to stand up to the United States.
Okay, so you kind of figured you would go there so that they couldn't get you back, and then you felt safer. What did the Russians want, or did they?
Nothing. They wanted absolutely nothing. I didn't get any knocks on the door. They didn't ask me for anything. Absolutely nothing. And still to this day, I'm still waiting for a knock on the door. Maybe the intelligence services to come say, hey, come help us with this or whatever. But no, it's never happened.
Alan, can I interject there?
Yeah.
I was waiting for a knock on the door myself when I went to visit Don. I thought they were going to show up. And it was amazing. There was absolutely no presence of any kind that made me feel uncomfortable when I was there. You know, John might as well be living in the U.S., you know what I mean?
Well,
except for the excitement surrounding, you know, the Epstein case we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, that was true. I mean, it was a normal situation, you know. He was just living there, and there was no connection, you know, to any kind of connection to, you know, the Russian government at all.
John, you left your family and kids as well, is that right? Or how is that
work? Yeah.
So how does that work? Like, what, did you tell them, or did...
No.
Okay.
I didn't tell anybody. I didn't even tell my dad, because the last thing I wanted is for anybody to be accused of helping me flee the country. where the FBI could use that as leverage against them to get me back.
And so now, I understand you're becoming a citizen or trying to become a citizen of Russia.
Trying.
Yeah. What's the basis of that, if you don't mind me asking? Are you saying that, for what reason are you becoming Russian, let's say?
Well, look, I'm a stateless person now, you know?
Right.
I mean, I can't go home. I like this country very much, you know? It's a beautiful place, Ron will tell you. It's not like people in the West think it is. It's absolutely different. I have a great time here. I have a lot of friends. And, loyalty is a two-way street. When I needed protection from my government, they gave it to me. And, my own government stabbed me in the back. So, this is my new home. This is my new country. And as such, I want my citizenship.
Sounds like Jason Bourne. Now, you're there in Russia now and working on citizenship. And it wasn't too long ago you decided to release information, just in September, I believe. And it was on Jeffrey Epstein and Prince Andrew, I believe, and a whole pile of stuff. First of all, where did that information come from?
So let me just clarify this for you.
Okay.
I didn't decide to release it.
Right.
My hand was kind of forced when MI6 reported that I had this information.
Okay.
So back in 2010, I had a friend, Joe Bricari, and he was a detective with the Palm Beach Police Department. That's different.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I was with the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. So it's a different, like I was a large jurisdiction. He was a small town within my jurisdiction. And, I wasn't involved in the Epstein investigation at all. But, I had some things that overlapped with Ricari because my zone butted up against the town of Palm Beach. Technically, the town of Palm Beach was in my zone. So we had maintained a professional friendship over the years, and when I stopped and I became known as like the guy that could keep secrets, he came to me with a bunch of boxes with the stuff, and he said, "Hey, I want you to keep this for me." It was probably about 2010, and I had five or six servers in my living room at this point. I said, "Yeah, sure, no problem." And I burned a bunch of DVDs he had, into an encrypted container and scanned a bunch of documents into an encrypted container. And next day he came, he took everything back, and that was it. And I never asked him what it was for, you know. I had an idea what it was. But I did this for a lot of guys. I kept a lot of documents on a lot of different cases for a lot of different people. So,
this Joe Ricari, he was working on the Epstein case, or do you know of, or?
Yeah.
He was?
Yeah, he was the lead detective on the Epstein case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, So just this last, you know, I'd really forgotten about most of this stuff. And just this last September, I got a call from a reporter asking me about, like, Epstein, what I knew about it. And honestly, I didn't know much about the case because, it wasn't my jurisdiction, it wasn't my case, and, I never really spoke to Ricari about it. So this investigative reporter from the Times in London starts asking me about it, and, he's really beating around the bush. I didn't know exactly what he wanted, so I just kind of gave him generic answers and told him I didn't really know much. Although I was surprised that Ricari had died. I didn't know. I knew a little bit before that conversation. And then this article comes out saying that MI6, is worried that I have compromising information on Prince Andrew. And I'm like, oh, Christ. So, you know, my logic was, because I had actually never looked at the contents. So if they knew that I had compromising information on Prince Andrew, well, if you remember, in 2016, the FBI took all my computers. They had copies of everything that I had. And the one saving grace that I had is I had an off-site backup that I used to keep, and it was shipped to me here in Russia in 2017. And the FBI found out in 2019 that this drive was shipped to me. So the FBI must have looked at the contents of my computer, okay? Mm-hmm. They must have seen all of the Epstein videos. They must have seen all the documents from Ricari, and they must have known exactly what was in there. And then when they found out that I had this drive shift, they must have called MI6 and said, hey, there's this information, we have a copy of it, and we just found out that it's made its way to Russia. So the FBI had to have the knowledge of what was in there. And because they would have never told MI6.
And to back up what John was saying, I didn't know anything about Epstein until I read that article. John sent me the article. You know, it appeared in the British paper saying, you know, and falsely claiming also that he was somehow a Russian asset. So it was a complete surprise to me, and that was the first time that I knew of John's connection to the Epstein case indirectly. And, he was the keeper of the secrets, because I didn't know anything about it at all.
So why do you think the FBI was aware of it? I mean, they raided your place and they got the files. So why do you think they were worried you were going to come out with it?
Because they found out that I had this drive shipped to me in 2019, which was a backup.
Wow. So now what have you done with it now?
Now that drive is safely stored away somewhere in South Russia. I've made 10 duplicates, and they are sitting on servers all around the world, encrypted. I've got 10 other people that aren't connected with the holders of the other data. 10 other people have the decryption keys. None of the people with the data know any of the people with the encryption keys. And there are 10 more people who know make contact with the appropriate person, with the encryption key to the appropriate, data backup. So I thought this out very carefully. If something happens to me, then these keys will be connected to the data backups and everything will be decrypted and disseminated.
So the information you have is quite delicate, should we say. What do you hope to do with this?
Just survive. You know, I get a lot of guilt trips from people saying, you know, you're sitting on this, you should release it, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I stood up against the criminals in my government already. And I lost my house. I lost my car. I lost my money. I lost my children and I lost my country. And nobody gave a crap, you know? So the only thing I have left is my life and my health. And, you know, this is kind of my insurance policy that I'm going to keep both until I get to see my children again.
Wow. So now how is life in Russia now? Like, as far as do you have to watch your back? Are you worried about problems happening to you or people trying to get you over there?
Well, so it's interesting. The night I dropped Ron off at the airport, I was followed 50 kilometers back to close to my apartment in the district where I live, which it's not easy to follow somebody for 50 kilometers in Moscow, you know, because none of the roads are straight. Getting anywhere is like complete havoc. So this car followed me for 50 miles. And I wound up, I ditched my car and took off, like across some railroad tracks and through some abandoned buildings. And I went and I picked up my car the next day. I checked like the bottom, like I crawled underneath it to make sure there was no explosive devices or GPS tracking devices planted. And, you know, I kind of went about my business. And then I drove to Sochi last week, and I noticed a strange sound. All five of the lug nuts had fallen off of my driver's side rear tire. I don't know how it happened. Seems to me it was deliberate, because all the other lug nuts on all my other tires were tight. You know, how the wheel didn't fall off, I'll never know. A couple of nights ago, I wound up with glycol poisoning.
Glycol poisoning? So, how did that happen? Something you ate, or?
I don't know. I went out with some friends, I don't know.
So, are you worried now that they're going to try and kill you? And who they are? Exactly?
You know, it's strange, because you would think that these people would want me to stay alive, right?
Yeah,
but I'm not so sure. I don't know what the motivation is. I don't know what the end game is. Could it be that my lug nuts just came loose as a fluke? Maybe. Could it be that I just wound up with glycol poisoning from, you know, bad alcohol? Maybe. But these two things happen within a few days of each other. It's just very odd.
Well, do you know?
So now I'm. Now I'm heading somewhere safe. I've got a whole bunch of Stepsnaz guys going to be kind of watching out for me. And, yeah.
Mm. So now the information you've got kind of encrypted and hidden away, do you know all the information that's in it yourself? Do you personally know what's
in
it? No. You don't?
No, I never looked through it until... Me and after all this stuff happened, Ron was standing in my living room, and I went into my closet, and I came out, and I handed him the drive. And he's like, "What's this?" I was like, "Oh, these are the Epstein files." And he looked at me, he's like, "Oh, I don't want to hold this." He gave it back. And I was like, "All right, you know, no problem." And I just kind of, I put it back. And, you know, a few days went by and we were talking. And we said, you know, maybe we should just kind of take a quick peek at just some of the files to see what's on there, you know? And she's like, "Well," he's like, "All right." And we kind of agreed that we weren't going to, like, make it a point to identify anybody, because really, that's not what I wanted to do. I don't want to identify anybody and come out and say, "Oh, this is who's on it," because once I burn one person, then my leverage goes away and they say, "Well, I might be next, we better get rid of this guy," you know?
Right.
So I plugged the drive into a docking cradle and I started decrypting it. Ron was sitting at my table taking a nap. Working on the laptop. Yeah. I took a nap, and I woke up and I looked, and it finished decrypting, and I opened it, and there were files from, I guess, 1994 to 2005, and me and Ron, we just kind of picked a couple. We picked like seven, I think, at random, and just kind of opened up and kind of scrolled to the middle just to kind of see what was on there, and yeah, most of it wasn't pretty.
Yeah. So now, Ron, what are you guys going to do with this information? And you said you're talking about TV series and things. So how are you going to do this?
Well, I've been working on it. Like signed a contract about 9 months ago, and so I've been, you know, slowly working on it. I've got several projects I'm working on, and trying to look for an angle. And I'm going to somehow incorporate it into the flow of the narrative that I'm trying to develop for John's story, on that sort of thing. You know, the tapes, there's a lot of things I could do with it, and the Epstein story isn't over yet. You know, it's still coming out, and we don't know what's going to happen. But you know, it makes for a real exciting possibilities. You know, we were talking about, for example, the A-Team. You remember the A-Team on TV?
Right.
You know, suppose John, you know, and in his book he says he thought about revenge, right? He thought about revenge against all these people, you know, that screwed up his life. And so what if John developed an A-Team, you know, a special team where you had an anti-money laundering expert, you had a cyber expert, you had somebody in law enforcement, put them all together like the A-Team with Mr. T, you know, and all that. And they went back, and John did get his revenge, you know, in some way. So, you know, there's a lot of possibilities on that. But, you know, to talk about those, the scenes, I actually saw a little less than John because he had run them.
Yeah.
And I heard these noises in the background, and I was sitting at the table, and I turned around, I go, "Hey, John, what's that?" And I looked and I could see the image, and it really was just like surveillance tapes, you know, like you see in the movies, you know.
Yeah.
In a hotel, looking down, and you know, it was fairly far away, and pretty boring, you know. It was just a sex scene, you know, a young girl and it looked like an older guy, and they ended up you know, having sex, and I saw a little less than John because he did running them, like I said. So I saw maybe three of them. I think it was three, maybe four at most. It was like 4 or 5 minutes on that. And then we closed it up. But, you know, it was pretty disgusting, as both John and I, you know, agreed after, you know, taking a glimpse at it.
Mm. Well, I think a curious question, and people would probably follow up when they hear this by saying, why won't you
turn the evidence over to some sort of police authority?
Because the FBI already has it.
I just want to make that clear, but because so basically you're saying that the FBI already has the evidence. They know what happened.
The FBI already has it. They know they have it. And the reason they know they have it is because they contacted MI6 to tell them what I had.
And so they don't want to pursue this, or do you think they're going to use that evidence down the road, or what do you think they want to
they've
do?
Opened an investigation. They say that they're going to vigorously. This is what they're saying, and I read in the press that they're vigorously going to pursue an investigation now. I don't know.
They're never going to release. They're never going to bring up the tapes, and I'm going to tell you why. They might use Prince Andrew as a fall guy, be like, "Yeah, we're going to vigorously protect this,"
right.
But I'm pretty sure I recognize somebody from one of those clips that we watched, who's a pretty prominent guy here, well, not here, but in the U.S. I couldn't place him first, but I think I know who he is. And I think the FBI, there's going to be so many high-profile people in those tapes that the FBI is not going to pursue it because it would cause absolute chaos in our democracy.
I agree with that because I think they're going to pay lip service. You know, it's going to look like it, and it's just going to die out, hopefully, or at least they hope it's going to die out, just like MI6's death.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many questions, and it just disappeared. You know, the whole story about how Epstein died, and a lot of people, of course, believe that it was, you know, foul play involved there.
Well, what do you think the FBI, their motive is? But just to protect these people, or do you think that they're controlled by these people? Because in a lot of the media and the talk going around is that, you know, Trump was involved and Bill Clinton was involved, and there's a lot of other names. But Trump and the FBI are not exactly on good terms.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't, no, I honestly,
yeah.
I think some people, high-level government, and probably law enforcement, would be implicated by these tapes. That's my suspicion.
So it's just kind of protecting their own, is sort of.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I think that's the most likely scenario that's going to evolve.
So now, John, you've written a book, haven't you? Now, can people pick up the book anywhere? And what's the book? And tell us where they can get it.
It's on Amazon. It's Bad Wolf, BADVOLF. And, I put it out about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really make any money from it.
No.
But, you know, I just want to make that clear because people are like, "Oh, you're trying to hawk his book," and honestly, I don't really care. you know, I make what 50 cents or $1 out of every book, and I think my royalty check last month was like $4 from Germany. you know,
yeah.
So it's not like it's even buying me beer. So, but yeah, I have a book and people are free to read it. I don't go into any detail on this because, you know, it wasn't even a thought in my mind when I wrote the book. But it's about, you know, me growing up. You know, my dad was a drug smuggler back in the 80s. And, you know, why I joined the Marine Corps and why I did what I did when I was a police officer and how I wound up in Russia.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Very interesting story. Now, do you want people to have any sort of contact information on you? Do you have a website or anything you want people to know?
Well, they can look me up on Facebook, John Mark Dugan, D-O-U-G-A-N, or Instagram, which is The Bad Wolf, T-H-E-B-A-D-V-O-L-F.
You should explain what you mean by bad wolf, so people understand what that term means.
Yeah, so bad wolf, B-A-D-V-O-L-F, When I published the when I published all the names, and actually when I published the recordings of Detective Mark Lewis admitting to engaging in these crimes for the sheriff, I published them under the name Bad Wolf, claiming to be a Russian hacker to throw everybody off the trail, so they weren't looking at me. You know, because recording somebody in the state of Florida, it's a 5-year felony. Well, if you look me up in the system, I got 19 charges against me for recording, so I'm facing 95 years in prison for recording a dirty cop.
Wow. So whatever happened to Mark Lewis? Did he get convicted of any of these crimes?
Oh, hell no. Boy, they swept that under the rug. They sent it to Internal Affairs, and the only thing he got in trouble for was speaking about unauthorized investigations.
Wow. And so now, Ron, let's give out your information. So your show and your website and anything like that, so people want to look you up and give it away.
Yes, my show is The Crime Beat with Ron Chepsick, and it's at the Artist First, artistfirst.com website. You can look it up every Thursday at 8 p.m. I got a website, ronchepsick.com, ronchepsiuk.com, and I'm available on Facebook. You can friend me if you want, and that's about it.
And you've written a book or two, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, right. I've written about 35 books. And,
Jesus.
You can check them out on my... plus, I'm a screenwriter now, so I've got I've optioned some scripts. So just check it out on my website, ronchepsick.com.
That sounds good. Well, so just before we go, John, I was just going to say, what is it you want or hope that people get out of you speaking out and your book and everything you're doing in the public? What is it you want people to come away with?
Don't trust the government. Don't trust law enforcement. You know, 90% of the guys are good guys, but they still protect the 10% that are bad guys. And, you know, I think people need to make us think about why the FBI is hiding this information. And they need to march on their local FBI offices, demanding them to do a proper investigation, because this Epstein guy and his group of friends, they're a bunch of dirty scumbags, and they deserve all the rotten hell. And for them to be protected by the FBI, I mean, there's absolutely no excuse.
Another thing, too, is do your diligence. What's amazing is a lot of these officials are so corrupt, but they're elected by the people. And they keep being reelected again and again. And so, the only people you can blame are the people that are electing them. So people that are voters in the American democracy are going to have to do a better job of diligence on the people that are running for office and pay much more attention. And maybe that's, that'd be one step in how to deal with the pervasive corruption that exists, you know, in our official institutions.
Can't agree more. Well, this has been an interesting hour, and I have to thank you both. Our guests have been Ron Chepsick and, of course, John Mark Dugan. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.